The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Broadcasting live from our studios in New York City and streaming over the video at the same location. So you can go to progressiveradionetwork.com or GaryKnoll.com if you'd like to watch today's program. Two different topics today, both extremely relevant. Later on in today's program, when we're able to reach her in Vienna, Austria, Jane Burgermeister, subject criminal charges by the Austrian government on Europeans leading swine flu critic. Updates on the swine flu, the fraud that it is, the vaccine, and the World Health Organization's involvement in this. Now listen to this. Here's a woman whose facts have been well established, but who now is considered a criminal because she dared to tell the truth about the dangers of vaccines, and she embarrassed some governments. We'll talk with her. Then in the second hour, our Conversations with Remarkable Minds series continues, probably for the entire hour. What comes after the global reign of the American Empire? A look at the emergence of a new multipolar world with Dilip Hero. He is a political scientist, historian, playwright, filmmaker, and remarkable insights. And he's been a commentator for the BBC and Sky and CNN. He's written over 30 books, including Blood of the Earth, The Global Battle for Vanishing Oil Resources, and Secrets and Lies, Operation Iraq Freedom, and the Collapse of American Power in the Middle East. So we will have an interesting one-hour conversation with him. Time permitting, I will do the commentary, it's a long one, on Monsanto, the poster child for corporate manipulation and conceit, as well as another one, Boomers Take Up the Plow and Open Small Farms. This is a commentary from Laura Tillman of the Daily Yonker. So we have a lot to share with you, always starting with the latest in the area of quality information on how to improve the lives that we live. By the way, I just want to say a thank you to all the people in the Philadelphia and mid-Pennsylvania and southwest areas of New Jersey last night who stayed up to share the moment when I premiered two new feature films on PBS in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And we exceeded their fundraising goals, helped the station, and shared a lot of positive information. We've talked about adult stem cells, and now there's new evidence that it can treat a host of diseases. This is from the latest on this topic. It says, doctors and researchers are hailing the success of adult stem cell treatments, which are treating everything from heart disease and diabetes to leukemia and blindness. Adult stem cells, the kind harvested from adult bone marrow other tissues, can be injected into the body to help regrow and repair organs, tissues, and skin. Unlike controversial embryonic stem cells, which are harvested from aborted human embryos, adult stem cells are extracted from living adult humans. And based on years of experience using innovative therapy treatments, adult stem cells are proving to be highly successful in treating otherwise incurable diseases. Dr. Thomas Einhorn, chairman of orthopedic surgery at Boston University Medical Center, successfully used a man's pelvis bone stem cells to heal the same man's broken ankle by drawing bone marrow from the pelvis and condensing it into an injectable liquid. Einhorn was able to spur a complete ankle healing in 4 months. Then there's the case of a patient whose damaged vision was restored after receiving adult stem cell treatment. So, more on this, and I'll be doing a full hour special on the latest in rejuvenative medicine in the next 2 weeks. We'll be, some of my advanced crew will be leaving for India tomorrow, and I'll be getting over there as soon as I finish lecturing in next Wednesday in Arizona. If you live up in Sedona, I'll be in Sedona for a lecture, and as part of, I've kind of combined where I go into the wilderness alone and meditate and fast, rejuvenate myself so I can come back and spend more time with more energy, helping whatever causes are needed. And this time I decided to make an exception because a lot of people want to hear a lecture, so I'm going to do a lecture. In any case, then it's off to China, or off to India, and filming in many locations. I want to film up in the Himalayas to show how far back the glaciers have receded. I want to film and then show where the glaciers create the rivers, the seven major rivers in from the Mekong Delta and the Yangtze and the Yellow River, and all these rivers originate in the Himalayas. Well, if the ice pack in the Himalayas is reduced, it means there's less water. And it means that if it gets warmer, which it is, it means that the water does comes too fast, too much at one time, and that causes major flooding. Then I'm going to show how farmers in India are actually farming water, digging wells to sell the water instead of planting crops. I'll also be filming in the ghettos, and I'll be filming the new poor, those who had educations, had nice incomes, were enjoying a middle-class lifestyle, and now are not. And then I'm going to film the traditional poor in Calcutta and other major areas, and then I'm going into the country. And then we're going to film genetic engineering, organic gardening. A whole lot of different themes will be covered in that trip. And then I'll be showing that when I get back. Here's the latest about this whole adapting the Western diet, because I had broadcast 3 years ago that the new emerging middle and upper middle class in India were looking at America. What does America have? What's their upper middle class have? Well, they all have flat screen TVs. We have to have them. They all have cars. We have to have them. Everyone in the family has a car. Well, okay, then we do have to do the same thing. We all have all these designer clothes and watches, and we have enormous amounts of things. Oh, and we have to have convenience food all the time. Well, that meant that you have to display something. To gain something, you display something. It's a basic rule of life. And it's one of the myths of our story that we can just keep doing it all. No, you can't. You can do a lot of things, but for every new thing you do, you display something that was already there. An example, a person who is modestly successful and has time for all the things that are important in their life. True story. A woman I know. But then decides that she wants more. So she begins to work harder, put more time and energy into one project. That project consumes more and more time, but the reward is greater and greater. The greater the reward, promised, perceived, or projected, the more time and energy committed to it. Now the woman's health starts to suffer because instead of exercising every day, doing yoga every day, doesn't happen. Instead of going for nice walks, instead of visiting with friends and family, doesn't happen. Instead of bringing passion, pleasure, play, creativity, doesn't happen. Instead of sitting and spending a better part of a day reading a good book and gaining something from it, doesn't happen. But here is the payback. All that will surely happen when the person becomes successful and there's a payoff. Unfortunately, in her case, it doesn't happen. This woman lives in Los Angeles. This woman is now broke. And as of this week, this woman is staying with the friends that she didn't have time for and borrowing money to live from the friends that she didn't have time for and is angry at the world and depressed, bringing that negative energy into their environments. And I was called by one of her friends, would I speak with her? Because one of her friends is one of my friends, I took the time out of a busy schedule and I put it in perspective. And I said, the solution to your problem is not to get angry, not to be depressed, not to mooch off your friends, but rather to appreciate that you've paid a very heavy price for a very simple lesson. There is no such thing as more without simultaneously creating less. They are one and the same. So for everything you do that's more, you automatically have to create less because there's only a finite amount of time and energy in any given day. And we're a society that wants to have more of everything. When we get started on the internet, we spend more time on it. On Facebook, more time on it. There was a person that wrote yesterday, does Gary Nall really look at his own personal Facebook? He's got thousands of friends and, you know, surely he doesn't have time with his schedule. Well, when I returned last night, it was about 2:30 in the morning. It's a long drive out there, and I went into my office and I took a look at all my important messages, and I saw this message because it was up on my Facebook, and I answered the person, yes, once a day, at the end of the day, I look at the messages and see if they're constructive or destructive, and if there's anything that is important and relevant enough that something should be done about it. More often than not, there isn't. It's just, from what I can see, people talking about things that are absolute trivia with other people who are strangers, as if sharing the trivia of their life is connecting them on an authentic way, and it isn't. And I'm going to deal with this. I'm going to do a whole program on the downside of superficial connections and conversations. In any case, if you set your life so that you plan on having time each day for everything that's important to your well-being on all levels, then you make sure that you do not exceed on one because it will cost you on another. Think how many people have strained, frayed, and broken relationships because the relationship no longer became as important as something else that took its place. And what took its place? Time. Time away from something is time given to something else. And are we capable of sitting alone, looking at our life, and being honest about the myth of our stories? If we are honest, then we can see where we have spend too much time in one area, even if we thought it was productive because what we're going to gain, and never balanced it against what we would lose in another area. And this is not only something that the individual does. Societies do it. Governments do it. For example, do you really think that Obama and his Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, and Petraeus, and all these people actually sit down alone and ask themselves, what is the likely outcome and the laws of unintended consequences to having drones bomb an Al-Qaeda? And what will it mean if we kill 10 or 100 or 1,000 Al-Qaeda? Will it stop Al-Qaeda? No, it won't, because there'll be 10 people to take the place of each person who's martyred. What's it like to do to people who we had wanted to think well of us and to work with us? Well, I can assure you, what would you think if in the United States, Iran invaded and took over Texas and started looking for the patriots to kill? But for every patriot that was killed, 50 innocent civilians were killed. Why should we be looked at any differently when we invade and occupy a country without ever asking for the unintended consequences? So in life, every choice you make creates an unintended consequence and a displacement of energy and a reprioritizing of time. You eat a hamburger, there's a consequence. Not today, maybe not tomorrow, but sooner or later, the ingredients in the hamburger, the impact upon your cells, what you cannot see or feel today, will have a consequence. But what if you ate a veggie burger? Ah, a good consequence. But what if you didn't take time to eat? You were too busy working. Ah, a negative consequence. Then your blood sugar is going to be adversely affected. Then the nutrients you need won't be there. Then you're going to find that you're going to run nutrient deficiencies. So then you start to lose energy. So then you start looking for sugar, or caffeine, or an energy jolt. Or in some industries, cocaine. Or methamphetamine. That's what happens when we don't stop and think. Now this brings me to this. This is from the New England Journal of Medicine. It says this. China faces an epidemic of diabetes after adapting a Western diet. Quote, China suffers from far more cases of diabetes than previously thought, placing its diabetes epidemic on the same scale as the United States. Quote, in the last 10 years, with the country's economy expanding quickly and people's standard of living improving, people's lifestyles have changed. China's economic development has gone from a situation of not being able to eat enough, of poverty, to having enough food and warm clothes and doing much less exercise. There's a perfect example of what I just said. Displacement. We want what Americans are eating. But did you ask yourself, are Americans healthy? The world knows that we have more obesity and more overweight people per population than anyone else in the world. The world knows that we have more heart disease and cancer and diabetes than any other country per population in the world. Why would you want to emulate what obviously has laws of unintended consequences? But then that assumes that someone is taking the time to care about the results that are going to manifest in effects, and they don't. So the entire world is dumbing down. And finally, for those of you who need a nerve tonic, well, earlier this week, on Monday, I reported that they are doing a vaccine for the brain made out of herpes virus, and that it'll allow you to feel more calm. Well, I'm opposed to that. But here's something better. Rosemary is a very good stress buster and a nerve tonic. Now, all of us have had times when our nerves have gotten the best of us. In fact, with today's job demands and fast-paced lifestyles, chronic stress is just a way of life. Well, rosemary is known as a calmative. Rosemary also boosts the blood flow to the brain, which helps us think more clearly while improving memory. All you have to do is just smell it, and it can lower your cortisol levels. And as we know, the higher the increase in cortisol, the greater the damage to the body. That's your fight-or-flight response, and that won't allow you to relax. Rosemary also will stimulate our adrenal glands. Hence, we have more energy. That lifts our mood. The more energy you have, the better your mood. So rosemary is a terrific mood alterator. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm Gary Nall. You're listening to the Progressive Radio Network, the number one radio program on the number one internet radio station where independent-minded individuals come to listen to and share thoughts with others in the field. We are now connected with my guest in Vienna, Austria, Jane Burgermeister. We're going to discuss criminal charges by the Austrian government on Europe's leading swine flu critic. And also we'll get an update on the swine flu for this season and the World Health Organization's involvement in this clear and present hoax. Now, Jane is a medical and environmental journalist. She's living in Vienna, educated in Edinburgh at the University in Scotland. She's written for Nature, the British Medical Journal, The Scientist, Reuters, and The Guardian. As a European correspondent for Renewable Energy World, she learned the possible connection between the big pharmaceutical firm Baxter and the World Health Organization and the new strain of H1N1 swine flu virus appearing on the global arena. After filing criminal suit against Baxter and the World Health Organization on bioterrorism charges, she was dismissed from her reporting position. Her charges have been supported by some upstanding physicians who have also explored criminal activity between Big Pharma, the World Health Organization, the UN, and high-ranking government officials. Her original website, theflucase.com, was perhaps the most important and thorough website informing the European public about the bad science, politics, corporate monies, and critiques of last year's H1N1 flu campaign by the World Health Organization and other nations' health agencies. Now, with the vaccine makers and the World Health Organization in full throttle to launch new vaccines for the coming flu season, the Austrian government has filed criminal charges against Jane in an effort to silence swine flu critics. This includes attempts by Austrian officials to brand swine flu vaccine critics as terrorists. And Jane's flu site is being labeled that way, which forms the basis of the criminal charges. Jane's newest site for keeping abreast on her situation and for other flu news is birdflu666.wordpress.com. Nice to have you with us today, Jane.
Thank you very much for having me, Gary. Yes, it's a very worrying development. The Austrian government is trying to frame me. They actually are not filing criminal charges against me. They're using a hoax set of criminal charges to bury my own criminal charges, where I show that they are manipulating files and making false accusations against me to try and get me put under court guardianship, which is the equivalent of being unlimited detention. Under this particular thing in Austria, you're stripped of all your civil rights. You have no more access to your assets. I'm due to inherit something from my father who died, unfortunately, in October. And they have made a whole case of lies about my being unable to handle the inheritance and having to be put under court guardianship. And the final straw was when they actually faked criminal charges to bury my own, showing their lies, and to suggest I'm a hysterical conspiracy theorist who has to be locked away immediately. Fortunately, this has now been proven. The person who allegedly filed them emailed me and even wrote a letter saying he had never filed these criminal charges. So now, Gary, they're in big, big trouble here in Austria, and I can go to the European Court of Human Rights. The Justice Ministry is now getting involved. I don't put much weight on them. But Birgitte Jónsdóttir from Iceland, who's been defending the WikiLeaks website, has said she will also engage in this witch hunt and persecution against me. So I don't think they're going to get away with detaining me on August the 12th, and I have to go to court to be interviewed about whether I'm mentally stable enough to handle my father's inheritance and to continue being a free person.
Let me give you a little bit of suggestions. Whether you choose to use them or not is crucial. I spend a lot of time in the court system as I've gone after a lot of individuals and groups that I consider fraudulent and undermining Americans' health. One of the very first rules you've got to learn when you go into court is do not try to make the case that the swine flu or any other thing is dangerous. That's what they're going to want you to do. They're going to try to bait you in to making any statement. Instead, just keep it as simple as possible. There's three rules when you're in court: admit nothing, deny everything, and volunteer nothing. And if you do that, then you're fine. If they get you riled up, or if they get you excited or anxious to try to show that you were right in what you were writing, then that can work against you, because then here's how it works. The state will then call in an expert, a psychiatrist, who will say, clearly, the evidence is not there to support what she is saying. We have a preponderance of evidence that the vaccines are safe and effective, have saved all these lives. This woman is a delusional psychotic, or she's paranoid, delusional psychotic. She feels people trying to persecute her. And here's what she's written that verifies that. I'm just giving you a heads up that if you stay calm and focused, then they will lose. You will win. Then you have an opportunity to bring charges against them for what they've done to you.
Absolutely, Gary. You're absolutely right in your advice. They're going in this direction and trying to portray me as this paranoid individual who needs to be locked up and arrested, who's a danger to everybody. But if they fail to succeed in this, I have the right to bring compensation against the Republic of Austria for having initiated this whole process, which could see me stripped of all my rights, my freedom, and disappear forever. And I can, I believe, ask for quite a substantial sum of money, and I intend to do that. So at this point, they're getting a little bit worried. They know that a big scandal is brewing when people find out about the way they've actually even invented now criminal charges to try and justify locking me away. They have created a false set of criminal charges and want to imply these are ones that I have written, and I believe these criminal charges are totally hysterical and without any evidence and making all these big claims, and these are supposed to be what I have, you know, associated with me. But now I've been able to show that they have invented this, that they're trying to frame me, so there's going to be, I think, a big, big scandal eventually here, Gary.
Good.
The worrying thing is that this seems to be just a part of a campaign in Europe to crack down on investigative journalists. There are not many of us left here in Europe, but a very important Polish journalist was arrested just about 10 days ago and disappeared into police custody and hasn't been seen since. So this seems to be part of a bigger pattern that is happening in Europe, and people here in Europe are not aware, I think, of the extent to which our civil rights and our freedoms are now hanging literally by a thread.
Okay, what legislation is in place, if any, in Austria and elsewhere in Europe that can support the charge of identifying anti-vaccine activists as terrorists?
Well, it's there was an anti-terror law due to come into force in Austria on the 1st of August. And there was a paragraph within this law which basically made any critic of the government or a government policy, such as the vaccine policy, could be stamped as a terrorist. And it became a terrorist offense to even look at a website classified as a terrorist website or to support these views in any way. So it's an incredibly loose, badly defined paragraph. And unfortunately, the webmaster of the flu case, Johan Nicholson, put up a report on the 4th of July that could be classified as a terrorist report, its incitement to violence, to mindless random violence, and he locked me out of the website. That's why, I moved earlier back to my bird flu 6-6 blog, because I understood he was trying to sabotage these efforts. But if the law in Austria had come into force on the 1st of August, this website and anybody who'd ever clicked on it could be part of this international list, and therefore liable to jail sentences of 2 years in Austria. So that is how close we have come here in Austria to
just because,
a situation like yours.
Just because those individuals who go to that site are questioning the safety and efficacy of vaccines, they could now end up in 2 years in prison because it would be a so-called terrorist site. President Obama is, in my opinion, becoming one of the most dangerous presidents in American history, is doing the same thing. There's legislation that has been supported by virtually all the Republicans, many of the Democrats, through the Patriot Act and the second Patriot Act, that if they have the right to deem you as being suspect, they have the right to eavesdrop on your phone conversations, read your emails. And they're doing this to peace activists. They're doing this to Green Party members and anybody in environmental groups. Now, to this point, tell us the newest information on the corruption of the World Health Organization hyping the swine flu scare in collaboration with Big Pharma into one of the most massive public health frauds ever.
You're absolutely right, Gary. I mean, here in Austria, Baxter almost started a bird flu pandemic in 2009. Since 2 kilos of flu material were contaminated with the bird flu virus, which the World Health Organization supplied to Baxter, and this was sent to 16 laboratories in 4 countries, and if a member of the Czech lab biotest hadn't discovered it on time, it could have gone into people's jabs through vaccinations, and it could have triggered a bird flu pandemic. And there was no investigation by the Austrian government. The people who were responsible for what was a deliberate attempt to trigger a pandemic, because we're talking about high security labs here, where viruses as dangerous as that have to be kept under lock and seal, are still at large. They didn't have to answer any questions. I filed charges about it in April, just at the start of April. And the state prosecutor started an investigation, but it was dropped in September. And just a few weeks later, about 14 days later, the swine flu started in Mexico. In very mysterious circumstances, completely overhyped. I knew from the experience with Baxter, this is a big pharma trying to trigger a pandemic, because as soon as a pandemic level emergency 6 is declared, governments in Europe activate laws to buy huge quantities of pandemic vaccines, and indeed in the USA, and laws come into place which allow forced vaccination and forced quarantine, and the takeover of countries by the World Health Organization and UN security forces. And we are still, even though the Council of Europe and the BMJ have produced reports showing that this was all a pandemic hoax for the benefit of Big Pharma, nevertheless, we are still, even today, on pandemic level emergency 6. So the same conditions apply. We're under martial law. We're the World Health Organization, UN vaccine martial law, in effect. And I think the World Health Organization still attempts to get a bird flu pandemic going in some way or another, as they did with Baxter in February 2009. They still want to try and force people to take these dangerous vaccines, and that's why they want people like myself and others out of the way before they launch this huge hype concerning the bird flu vaccine. The good news is that the Council of Europe has produced a very critical report of the swine flu pandemic hoax. UK MP Paul Flynn published on June the 4th absolute kind of demolition of the World Health Organization and exposed all the links to the pharmaceutical companies. And this report will go to every single European Parliament in the next legislature, also to the Austrian Parliament, which might be another reason why they want to get rid of me so desperately. So there is movement on that side. Also, many of the mainstream newspapers did publish information about this report. The European public now has become very skeptical about vaccines. People are not even taking the regular seasonal flu jab. The number of people taking vaccines has plummeted in Europe. Profits are down. And they're getting so desperate, they're thinking of introducing legislation, as you have now in the USA, to try and force people to take the vaccine. And so this is the situation we have here, Gary. We have a movement of growing awareness about the dangers of the vaccine, and at the same time, a much bigger clampdown by government and Big Pharma on critics of the vaccine and pressure to get people to take it through this legislation, like the Obamacare legislation you have. Coming up, people in America are going to be under unprecedented pressure to take the seasonal flu jab, which has the swine flu virus, which has caused convulsions among children under 5 in Western Australia, which was so serious that the campaign had to be suspended just a few weeks ago. And this is what the people of America and Europe are supposed to be taking as a seasonal flu jab. So not to mention the pandemic that could eventually be coming. People have to, I think, realize that these vaccines have to be avoided. They are dangerous. And try and stay healthy using homeopathic methods.
All right, two more questions. What can you tell us about the members, who they are, that comprise the secret advisory committee in the World Health Organization that engineered and advised the World Health Organization to make the H1N1 strain a high-level pandemic issue?
Well, this is as far as I know. I've been sort of busy trying to save myself from this detention, but the last I understood, we don't know who they are. Not even the Council of Europe was able to find out the identity of these people. The World Health Organization refused to cooperate. If we look at the members of the composition of the other vital committees to the World Health Organization, various flu and vaccine committees, we see an enormous number of people who either work for pharmaceutical companies or have worked for them or have been consultants for them. So we can perhaps assume, it's quite reasonable to assume, that at least some of these members of this emergency committee are also working for Big Pharma or whatever. This could be the motivation for the World Health Organization for keeping it so secret. But we don't even know who is responsible for grading the mild and harmless swine flu as such a lethal pandemic that we all had to move on to pandemic level emergency 6 and go under this kind of military martial law where just vaccination and quarantine is possible. So, Guy, we don't know the answer to that even today.
All right. My final question, why do you feel that the European Union investigation avoided looking at the CDC, since the World Health Organization, the CDC's offices are almost next to each other in Atlanta, and they collaborate together extensively as part of the swine flu hoax? Do you have any evidence that the CDC was also part of the World Health Organization decisions to make the swine flu scare an international issue for the benefit of some of the drug companies that they may have been affiliated with?
Well, as far as I can see, the CDC has the same kind of role as the European Medical Agency here in Europe, that they're completely working hand in hand with the World Health Organization to hype these pandemics and give people the vaccination. I think the European Council report confined itself to European territory because that's its remit as a political body based in Europe, composed of all the members of European Parliament, parliamentarians. So I think that's why they didn't look at the CDC. There was another investigation initiated by the European Parliament, which is something different from the Council of Europe. About 220 European MEPs asked for an investigation into the European Medical Agency's role in the swine flu pandemic. Now, that would be the equivalent of the CDC. It's two-thirds funded by Big Pharma in Europe. It played a vital role in allowing these untested vaccines to be given to millions of people and in undermining popular pharmacovigilance. But this investigation was blocked by the higher-ups in the party, so they didn't get their investigation in the end.
Okay. Jane, we wish you all the best in your upcoming hearings. If they allow the camera in the court, by all means have someone film the hearings. And keep in touch with us so we'll keep our audience up to date.
Thank you very much for having me, Gary. Thank
all
you.
All the best.
Jane
Burgermaster, in an exclusive interview from Vienna, Austria, she is being attacked by the Austrian government because they want to deem her work on questioning the safety and efficacy of the swine flu vaccine, the lawsuit that she brought against the pharmaceutical company Baxter, who was making one of these vaccines, because she found what she claims is massive fraud. They want to claim that her website is the same as a terrorist website, and anyone going to it and reading any of the articles and downloading any of the information that is valuable information, I might mention. She's a meticulous journalist. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Now you speak your words warm and sincere, and let me know that your love is here. A pretty face you may not possess, but what I like about you is your
like to welcome all of you. This is the one place that's not afraid to take on corruption, take on the White House, take on the Senate, take on these punks. We're not afraid because they're cowards, they're idiots, but they have power and money. And as long as you're a suck-up with power and money and you get all these other wannabe suck-ups with power and money, then they control whatever they want until they're challenged, until you can get them in discovery. Get someone in discovery, and you can nail them. So, unfortunately, most people are afraid of people who wear a badge or carry a gun or secret agencies. And that's how we've gotten to become a fascist state, the fear of most people to stand up and be counted, and those who are standing up, at least finding their voices, are not given any credibility for standing up. It's like we should all be quiet little drones. No, we're not going to be quiet little drones. If we see corruption, we're going to call it out. And there is no sacred cows that won't be called out. Boomers, take up the plow and open a small farm. This is from Laura Tillman from Daily Anchor. Here's what she says. Quote, a former Dallas attorney sells sprouts under the cover of a white tarp and a fraying straw hat. A former graphic designer ploys candy-striped beets on a Mexican tablecloth dotted with purple and gold figures, while a U.S. custom agent gives a customer advice on cooking eggplant. Just another weekend at the farmer's market in Harlingen, Texas. Here in the Rio Grande Valley, baby boomer generation professionals have traded in their desk jobs for a different kind of retirement. From their 40s to their 60s, farmers like Calman Morris spend most of their days working the few acres of land outside of humble homes to supplement their incomes with work they believe in. It's all made possible by three new farmers markets that have sprung up over the past 2 years. Yes, these farmers can make some money. But more importantly, farmers like Morris enjoy the life they're living more than the office jobs they left behind. The economic margins Morris lives within are narrow. He couldn't realistically afford to live this way if it weren't for the money he's banked from time spent in a more lucrative industry, graphic design. The impact the farmers here are making on the industry may be small. Cotton, sorghum, corn still dominate the area's fields, but they believe they're sowing the seeds for bigger change. I agree. Good for them. And that's part of what we're doing with this homestead project. All across America, I'm finding so many Americans of all backgrounds, all walks of life, former judges and lawyers and architects who are looking at developing homesteading skills. And I think that's very constructive, because various people are going to be affected to varying degrees based upon the reality of the economies we're living in, not the illusion of what Washington would like to tell us. If you're an African American, your unemployment rate is 15.7% officially. That means closer to 30% in reality. Why? Because there's 6.5 million Americans who haven't worked in 6 months. That's the longest time for that amount of people since the Great Depression. There's also 14.8 million Americans who haven't worked in a period of time. You add the two together, you got 20 million Americans. Now, how about all the people who stop looking for work? Or how about all the people who work 2 hours, 5 hours, 10 hours a week? They're still considered employed, but reality is they're not. And so now you're looking at an unemployment rate of about 20% of all American adults. So people have to learn other skills. Which reminds me, tomorrow at noon, I'm going to be having my one and only discussion for people interested in homesteading projects. I'm going to do a trial base. So I'm going to give people a couple months. I'm going to select only three people and see, does it work? Will it work? Can they do it? So anyone interested in homesteading, it'll be in the month of September and October, and it won't be in New York State, call Carolee's number. And I'll be interviewing people tomorrow, and I'll go into depth of what it is at that time. Anyhow, the idea is there. I'm ready to go. But now I have to challenge myself and see which pieces of the puzzle work, which have to be adjusted, which don't work, so I can then roll it out in about 6 months, so more and more people can benefit from this. Carolee, what's your phone number?
You can reach me at 646-926-5428.
Good. And in just about 17 minutes from now, Conversations with Remarkable Minds, What comes after the global reign of the American Empire? The emergence of a whole new multipolar world where we are not dominant. And my guest will be Dilip Hero, a really phenomenal man. You'll be listening to him. One quick special. We haven't given any this week. I'm out of green stuff. I'll hopefully be getting, and some of the other products, I'm out of a lot of stuff. But new is coming and revolutionary. That'll be next week. Now, today's special, muscle. Buy one and you get one free. It's a really terrific protein dietary supplement, delicious natural French vanilla. That's what I have to take because I have nothing else. My muscle max is gone forever. So I use this, two scoops. And it contains no animal or dairy products. It's fortified with methionine, leucine, valine, the isoleucine, lysine amino acids that compensate the most common limited factors in vegetarian diets. And it's designed for everyone. And you get a lot. You get a lot of protein, quality protein here. Plus, there's some other factors in there that are very good for you. So anyhow, it's got that wonderful, it's got cinnamon in there also and lecithin. So if you want your buy one, get one muscle to fortify with branched chain amino acids, your really good protein, then just give a call at 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Kara Lee in studio.
All right, Gary. Well, I got an email today from a listener. He is a gentleman who describes himself as a senior research in advertising for over 35 years and is still working today. He wrote you anonymously and stated that he has been listening to The Gary Null Show since its run on WMCA in 1976. He says, according to his research, his primary role is to investigate and understand the full scope of new products for manufacturers. For instance, a basketball manufacturer who wants to get an endorsement for a product and needs to decide which of the hundreds of star players would best represent the product requires that they have a deep understanding of the history of the players. Do they have skeletons in their closet that the mainstream media has not yet uncovered? What makes this situation unique that this gentleman is a master in his field? And so this man has access to research and information beyond Google and what would normally be available to researchers and reporters in mainstream media. So pretty much he has special investigative reporting. About 5-6 months ago, he was listening, and he heard a letter being read by one of your producers that stated that a mathematics professor had found that you have more firsts than the Beatles and Michael Jackson combined. And you said that that was pretty irrelevant to you. This shocked him.
Totally irrelevant.
Yeah.
I don't care.
So it shocked him because he thinks that it is really relevant to a world of a statistician. So then he thought what would take him a couple hours ended up taking him about 3 months to verify the points that were made in the letter on the radio earlier were in fact correct. He says that you've written over 650 articles, including reporting on over 120 original news stories. He says you've sold more books than Howard Stern, Rush Limbaugh, Bill Clinton combined, and you have a humongous core audience. He says that in the past you've raised over $100 million for PBS, you have over 67 top-selling health books, and more award-winning documentaries than any other documentaries in the U.S., including last year's Autism Made in the USA, which was included in 52 international film festivals. You are the number one in the history of PBS in fundraising for an individual and break records on every major station, including Boston, Miami, Tampa, Washington, and I'm sure many more. The second leading fundraiser was Susie Orman. You have over 24 original specials on PBS, and now you have the number one progressive radio network in America. And you're the longest-running number one health show for 15 hours a week for 33 years, which means in total numbers of hours, you've doubled Carlton Fredericks, who is a distant second. You have the complete handbook of nutrition published in 1972 and is still one of the top bestsellers in the world. According to the records of USA Track and Field and New York Road Running Club and Florida Track and Field Association, you've won more than 540 races as well as winning the overall Master USA Champion for your age group. You've won more than 78 races for your age group in Florida. In 2006, you were the first in your age group in all categories, and you've won the Silver Microphone Award for broadcasting 21 separate times.
What's he? Where's he going with this?
I'm getting there right now. There's one little paragraph left here, Gary, and it says, what was remarkable after all this research that he identified over 100 million people in the health and nutrition field that you're number one.
Wait, 100? You mean 100, not 100 million.
He says, that's what he says?
No, there's not. He's wrong.
Okay, all right. Well, he says that you're number one, and you're still growing with more to come, and that, you know, you've never reached a plateau, you keep growing, and he says that while you're bringing in $6 to $7 billion a year in the economy because of all the information and knowledge that is spreading, all based upon the foundation that you built 35 years ago. None of this attention is being paid, and he wants to know why. Why have you never decided to do the publicity angle? And he was surprised that you spend very little money on media coverage. And he wants to know, how are you successful for so long without this media attention?
Okay, I don't know if what he is suggesting is real or not. It's anonymous, so I don't give that any credibility. I don't spend any media money in media, so that's a moot point. Let's just say hello, goodbye to our WMYE audience, and they can continue listening and watching by going to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.